Welcome to Top Advisor Marketing, where you'll learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your practice. Brought to you by Advisor Content X, a done-for-you podcasting solution built just for trusted advisors. And now, your co-hosts of Top Advisor Marketing, Kirk Lowe and Matt Halloran.
Hello and welcome to Top Advisor Marketing Radio. I'm your host, Matt Halloran, the voice of Top Advisor Marketing Radio. Today's episode is brought to you by AdvisorContentX.com. Become a prolific online influencer like our guest today. And we're interviewing Julie Littlechild, the founder of Absolute Engagement and the author of a new book, The Pursuit of Absolute Engagement. Intentionally design a business that supports the life you really want. Now, I've personally referred more business to Julie than any other thought leader and service provider in the financial services industry, because really what she's contributed to in our industry, because it's groundbreaking and effective. Hello, Julie. How are you this morning?
I'm absolutely awesome. Thanks for that introduction.
You're very welcome. And thank you for everything that you've done over the years. We were just talking before the podcast started, and I think I've been referring business to you for up to 9 years now. So this has been something you've done for a long time.
It has been a very long time now, I think.
Well, we're going to talk about your new book today, The Pursuit of Absolute Engagement, Intentionally Design a Business That Supports the Life You Really Want. So the book is broken down into 5 parts, and thank you for the advanced copy. I really, really appreciate it, and it was a fascinating read. You break it down into 5 parts: a vision of something more, personal vision drives business vision, tailoring your client and team experience, don't forget that you're human, and overall your commitment. So I agree with all the professionals who especially wrote the testimonials in the book that everything starts with vision. So tell me about your take on this vital philosophy of success.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. It is important. And you know, what I find interesting is that I think when we talk about vision, we all use slightly different definitions as well. So, I mean, the couple of things that I particularly think are important with vision is, one, that it's probably helpful to, first of all, distinguish a goal from a vision, because I think those two things get a little mixed up. And then the second is to start with your personal vision, which we'll probably get into a little more. But, you know, what I mean by that is, you know, you could say, I don't know, I have a goal, as you hear all the time, my goal is to reach a certain asset level. But my vision might be to reach the same asset level, working with certain clients, doing meaningful work, working with a team that inspires me. Mm-hmm. And that gets a bit more into a vision. Or, you know, I could say I want to have 100 million in assets with 200 clients. But my vision might really be something more meaningful to me, which would be impacting the lives of 200 families and then defining what that means. So, I feel that if we're going to create something significant and meaningful and big and different, then we really need to make sure we've got the vision as much as we have those goals.
And I'm hearing you say that it needs to be very specific also. So the more general it is, it's going to be more difficult to try to hit a target that's way too big.
It is. And, you know, I think that with a lot of things, I mean, I like starting big with anything, but then we've got to dissect that, unpack it, and really understand what that means in a practical sense, right? I mean, I could say I want to save the world, but really, what does that mean day to day? Because I tell you what, I haven't done it today. So we got to break that down.
Gotcha. Well, let's talk about drift. You talk about that in the book. What does that mean?
So, you know, in many ways, I think drift, which is really drift from the original vision that you had, is part of the problem that I was trying to solve with the book. And, you know, since actually writing the book, I did a small study with advisors, and I asked this question about, you know, to what extent are they on track relative to the vision and goals that they set for the business? And I might have suspected this, but I thought it was even more telling, because what I saw in the data was that only a third, so 36% of advisors said, I'm exactly on track. So, you know, the flip side, two-thirds of advisors are not. And one of the reasons, about, 28%, I want to say, was drift. And so what they were saying is, I have a vision. I started with a vision. I still have a vision, but over time, I've just drifted off track. So, you kind of wake up one day and find yourself looking back at this vision that you vaguely remember setting, but life got in the way. And it's, you made reasonable decisions along the way. You grew a business, you built a team, you had a family. You're just living your life and growing your business, and you realize that a lot of that may have taken you off track. And so that's sort of the drift. The other piece of that, though, is the last 36%. They didn't necessarily say they drifted. They said they changed. And I actually relate to this one myself, but what they're saying is, I started with a vision. I was on track. I'm successful. But you know what? I've changed. Maybe my values have changed. What's meaningful to me has changed. And therefore, I'm still off track, but for a different reason.
Okay. Well, one of the best things about the book is it has exercises to help you clarify and drive home those messages, those ideas. And you've been creating surveys for a long time. Are you using the same technique? And in like you were just talking about the research there with Drift, how did that impact this book?
So, well, there's in two ways, and so I guess I'd say yes. I've drawn on a lot of that experience in a way, and in some ways I haven't. So, I like evidence. It's part of my DNA. So this book is built around a fairly significant study that we did among advisors to understand what absolute engagement really is, and in particular, what the impact is. So definitely did some quantitative research there. But you mentioned the exercises. And it's interesting with exercises because it's more qualitative. So I think to some extent I've always had some aptitude for asking questions that get people thinking. And sometimes, if I'm honest, I think you do that so you just appear smarter and you don't have to have the answers, because if you have a really good question, people ponder that. But so qualitative is obviously very different. It's more inward looking. It's a different form of research. But I'm a big believer in data, whether it's to inform the concept or whether it's just to get straight on what it is you want to do personally.
Okay. Well, would you mind reading the opening to chapter 2 on page 23?
So chapter two, it kind of starts with, first of all, the accepting the possibility of something more. So there's a path to something more. And chapter two begins, "To pursue absolute engagement is to be intentional about structuring your business in a way that supports meaningful growth. At the same time, it's about ensuring that you have the capacity, energy, and passion to stay focused on your goals for the long haul. So, absolute engagement is about your business, your life, and the connection between the two."
So, a wise person once told me, for everything that you want in life, you have to give up something proportionate to that want. In other words, you can't have it all. You can have a lot, but no one gets everything. How do you help advisors distill that and choose which path they're going to take to not only just have a great business, but also a great life?
It's a huge question. I guess you could say you can have it all, just not at the same time, which is maybe a
Yeah,
different
good.
way
That's a great way to
of
take it.
looking at it. What I really wanted to do with this is to highlight the connection between work or maybe success in life. So I wanted to say that, based on our research, it's clear that we can intentionally design a business that supports the life that we want to have. We can do that. But in the same breath, we've got to recognize that to do that is really hard work, and we need to create an environment that allows us to succeed. And so that's why we need to focus on our lives as well. So I don't specifically get into the trade-offs and the choices. There are many. Obviously, we all make a lot of choices as to where we'll focus our time. But I do get into the need to push ourselves in other parts of our lives so that we give ourselves room to breathe and encourage creativity and give ourselves the capacity to actually take action on all of this.
Well, let's talk about the three principles on page 35. You drive home this point even more that your personal vision drives your business vision. So break that down for me.
So yeah, the three principles, and it may be helpful just to give you a little context. When we went out and we talked to a bunch of advisors about how they approach their business, what we found is that we found a group of advisors, it was 15% of them, that's who we call the absolutely engaged, and they kind of lived by these three principles. And then what we did was we looked at the impact of doing that. So that's where these come from. And so the first one, as you point out, was about personal vision. And because what we were trying to get at was where's the intersection between growth and well-being? This isn't just about growth, it's about true success, which includes both. And we found that those who are absolutely engaged really did start with their personal vision, which means that a great business, one with momentum, one that's going to create well-being, really starts with that personal vision, and then we create alignment between that and our business vision. And so the three areas that came up as most important, personal vision you could set on a lot of different things, mm-hmm. but specifically what we dig in on is working with the right clients, doing the right work, and playing the right role on the team. And so if we can get clear on all what that would look like for us, then we can begin to build the business around that rather than the other way around.
Well, I think that awareness is the key to seeing things as they are and not as our mind might skew them to see them. So awareness was a key point in this chapter. Talk to me about awareness.
Yeah, so what we did was we had the three principles, the first of which you've mentioned about personal vision. And then because we didn't want to leave it there, we dug in and created a 5-point action plan, if you will, just big actions. And awareness, as you say, is the first step if we're taking action on this. So it really goes back to those three things: clients, work, and role. There are other things that might influence us. Like for me, where I worked was really important. I wanted to be able to work at home. I wanted to be able to travel and such. But clients, work, and role really dominated in the research. So awareness it's really just about getting real with yourself. You know, what do you love? What mm-hmm. turns your crank? What creates flow? What are you best at? And, the thing I say in the book is that this is really where possibility lives, because going through an exercise on awareness is without limitation, just trying to open your mind to what do I love to do and what might be possible if I were to intentionally design the business that I really want to have.
Mm-hmm. Well, I really enjoyed the bizarro world aspect of this. So the antithesis of awareness, you called it self-editing, right? So making it so that, okay, so I've got this vision, and then all of a sudden the butts come in. Talk about self-editing.
Yeah, I mean, you really have to hold a mirror up when you write about these things. And self-editing was a term that I used, and it's frankly one of the many things that get in our way. I think most of the barriers that I really uncovered were internal as I dug into this. So really, self-editing is just one of the subconscious things that we do that means we don't even have to try to pursue those goals. So, I could say that, I could go through an awareness process and say, I really love working with business owners. This is a group of people that they inspire me. I love how they operate. I can relate to them. I know I can help them. Wouldn't it be so cool if I could just work entirely with business owners? So you kind of begin creating. And almost immediately, I find what happens is the answers start creeping. If I did that, then not all of my clients are business owners, so I might have to say no to some new clients, and that would mean a decline in revenue. And then I wanted to take a big trip with the family this year. What's going to happen there? And I do have that assistant who's not so keen on business. And so I don't know how conscious we even are of this, but the net result of that is we just don't even start to take action because we have edited the dream to the point where we simply don't.
I used to call it shooting on yourself, and it just gets really stinky, and nobody really likes it. And just to remind everybody that we're talking to Julie Littlechild, the author of a new book, The Pursuit of Absolute Engagement, Intentionally Design a Business That Supports the Life You Really Want. Talk and define audacity, because I love that word. I love that you highlight that in the book.
So audacity is the second step, awareness and then audacity. And really what I'm asking advisors to do in this step is to take what they learned during that awareness phase and have the audacity to translate that into a business vision. Now, I think it is audacious, because audacity to me is really having the courage to draw a line in the sand and say, this is what I'm going to do, and take it's really starting to take action on what you really want to do. So if I, you know, if I went back to that previous example, I love working with business owners. That's awareness. Now, if the next thing I came to was I'm going to work with business owners as my primary target market, that's audacity. And it is really where courage lives, because for a lot of us, this is provocative. This is starting to make at least some significant changes in the business. So I kind of see audacity almost like the glue or the bridge maybe between personal and business vision.
I love the fact that you combined client and team experience, especially just into one sentence, because it makes the people who are reading the book realize that those should not be totally different experiences. So tell our listeners about that, please.
Yeah, that's a good spot, by the way, because I did that intentionally. I believe it to be true, but I think that we, you know, as you're suggesting, we tend to look at those things in isolation. And so a big part of this book is about alignment. It's about creating alignment between a personal vision, a business vision, a client experience, and a team experience. And by alignment, I mean that these things are all related, that they all influence one another, but that if we get them aligned, it's like gears. You create torque, create momentum, because they all start working together. So, you know, both client and team experience, I think, really are a reflection of a personal and business vision. So, you know, I'll just continue with business owners. If I want to work with business owners, that suggests a certain client experience. Mm-hmm. And certain things will be meaningful, certain types of communications or ways of working or products and services. And that client experience then suggests I actually need certain types of team members. They're all connected. You know, if my goal, and one of the women that I interviewed for the book works with women in transition, largely women who've gone through divorce. So if I took that example, she has, and someone could, build an incredible experience around that, mm-hmm. right? But if the team doesn't share the passion, or if they don't have the right technical skills, or if they don't have the right interpersonal skills, it will fail. Mm-hmm. So it's complicated, I think. You know, at one level, you need and want your team to be involved in defining what that client experience is. And on the other side of it is the same exercise could actually uncover that some people don't fit.
Sure, absolutely.
And so it's really tightly bound, I think, because the team brings it to life after all. So we need to engage on both fronts.
Well, you really broke down my next question here, which is the fact that those really are hand in hand. But I want to tease out the client experience, because that's something that you have years and years and years of experience surveying, asking questions, you know, harvesting data. So let's talk about the client experience.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, this is where I came from. I started with a very pure focus on client engagement, did that for a lot of years. And, you know, to some extent, I think what happened with this book is I was so convinced that client engagement was the only thing we needed to look at, because that's what I did every day. So why, mm-hmm. of course it is. But then I began to pull the camera back a little and just look at success in a broader context. And that's where the picture really filled in for me. But this, it does get real tactical on client engagement as well. So, you know, for those who are thinking, is this all about navel gazing and thinking about my future? I do believe that's important. But then we really try to get into the detail of what does client engagement look like? What will it look like? What are some of the trends that are impacting it? And so we go deep and we talk about the need to build a client experience around the target market, around your personal vision. So, and that really is the second principle, that client experience gets tailored based on that vision. And that's where it starts. But we talk about co-creation of value, what that means, how the relationship with clients is changing. We talk about things like client journey mapping and the need to create an extraordinary experience across different touch points, which begins before somebody becomes a client. The need to really not just do the foundational work of client experience, which I consider things like segmentation and defining the frequency of contact and you know, all of that. I think that's a critical first place to start. I think it's foundational. It means your relationships are profitable, but it doesn't mean they're great. And so the whole notion of client that we delve into more in the book is just, well, what does great really look like? And how do we do that?
So you're talking about action, right? Actually implementing different things. And the one thing that kills goal achievement is that action. And you have a whole chapter on action and what they need to do. You say it's deceptively simple, and philosophically it is, but in action it's tougher. Why?
In what we're talking about in action, and there's a lot, it's a whole section, and it's a big part of the book, because I agree that this is where it can all fall down. And this is what's difficult about this process, other than just the fact that it can be hard work, is I say this is where confidence lives, because it requires you to hold up that vision as a filter and look at your whole business, right? To say, well, who am I working with? How am I servicing them? Am I truly differentiated? What about my team? Do I have the right people? And so in this action section, what we try to do is you know, unpack what it really means to be extraordinary within the clients, with clients, excuse me, and then with team. And that's tough, but part of the tough part is just accepting that you might need to do things differently. I guess I'd also say that I tend to believe that there are some disruptive trends at play right now as it relates particularly to client and team engagement, that things are shifting, that we need to think a little differently. And, you know, and that means thinking a little further into the future and asking, how is this going to impact my business? So none of that is easy. It's important, and I think it can be fun, but I wouldn't say it's easy.
Most advisors don't get into financial services to become managers. And in fact, the biggest thing that I've dealt with over the last 12 years is interpersonal issues from an HR standpoint. Yeah. So advisors really need to engage with their team. Unpack how you explain that for our listeners, please.
Yeah, I'm sure in the work that you've done and do, you must see this in a lot of detail. But, you know, I do think that team is the critical driver. You can't do it alone. So really what we talk about is being as intentional around team engagement as you are, or we're suggesting you be around client engagement or personal engagement. And so there's a few big pieces to that. Part of it is visionary, I think, personal vision, like what kind of culture do I really want to have? And I think you have a culture, you know, the first person you hire, or at least you should start thinking about it. So what we look at is defining your culture, getting very clear on fit, who are the right people, or as Collins would say, you know, getting the right people on the bus. And then creating an engaging team experience. So that's when we'd get into the detail of things like, how do I create a really motivating and engaging environment? So whether that's through social or development or compensation. You know, I don't get into compensation specifically, but what are the things that we need to do to make sure people just love coming to work every day?
I love your chapter on reminding people that they're actually human. So, I know, isn't that amazing?
News flash.
So break down that news flash a little bit. I loved this chapter. I spent probably more time here just because I need to remind myself of this as an entrepreneur. I mean, we think that we have unlimited battery packs and all of that sort of stuff. So, where did this come from personally? And tell us about this chapter, please.
Yeah, I probably spent more time writing those chapters as well. So the last two steps, we looked at awareness, audacity, action, and then the last two steps, both of which fall under what you just talked about, are accountability and renewal. And look, I hesitate because I struggle myself with a lot of this. A lot of us do. But really, this principle recognizes that if we're going to do all of this, if we're going to build this extraordinary business, then we need the fuel to do that. And that comes in a lot of different forms. But what I realized very quickly as I got into this, and in fairness, I knew, but I don't think I'd articulated, is we're not just saying get a little more sleep. I mean, although that would be a really good thing.
That's probably a good start, yeah.
You know, we could start there. But you talked about, you know, the shoulds and the barriers earlier. Mm-hmm. These really kick in, I think, when it starts coming down to things like self-care, giving ourselves space, being kind of open and vulnerable to what we actually need. And so I think these steps surface a lot of pretty deep-seated issues, although we're talking ultimately about just allowing yourself to be creative by giving yourself some space.
And that's when the creative comes. It's like, many, many years ago, they used to talk about the muse visiting you, giving yourself that space. One of the things that I have found, and I don't know if you've experienced this, but when I'm traveling, and I know you have traveled a lot because you've spoken all over the place, but I purposely try to put myself into being receptive to that and give myself that space. When I'm traveling, and first off, you know, people watching is something that's very, energizing to me because I happen to love people because they're weird and wonderful. But that gives you the opportunity to be receptive. And I think another thing that allows you to be receptive is to be with like-minded, successful people. And you talk about a long-standing philosophical foundation of success that Napoleon Hill talked about many, many years ago, which is the masterminds group. So I have a two-part question here. The first one is, are you in a mastermind group, and why did you think that this was so important?
Yeah, so you're right. It goes way back, this concept. I'm hearing more and more about people talking about masterminds. So I'm in an informal mastermind group, I would say. I don't know that we follow the structure of a lot of them, mm-hmm. but it is a structure around connecting with people who are supportive and smart and help you think through issues as and when you need that. I was also part of a mastermind group, which is another form of them, which was situational. And it was a group that was formed for a very specific purpose with a group of people who were taking part in an event. And it was very much structured like a traditional mastermind group. So I saw the power of how these things could work and the really transformational power that it could have on success.
It's unbelievable. Groupthink is something that I think people underestimate the power of. And my background started as a therapist, and group therapy is one of the most effective ways to change behavior because, you realize you're not alone, and two, you get other perspectives that you wouldn't have in a one-on-one situation. Well, let's finish up today talking about renewal and commitments. Now, I want to remind our listeners that at the end of every section here, Julie has created these magnificent exercises. And so I know that's one of the things that will help people achieve the level of success that you're hoping that they achieve by reading the book. But talk to our listeners about how you help and the book can help them keep up this frenetic pace that we have as entrepreneurs.
Yeah, so you're right. The last step is very much about renewal. It's about refueling. It's about re-energizing. It's about acknowledging that we're not superheroes and that we actually have to take a step back. And it's about dealing with why we don't do it in the first place. You know, I think so many of us are paralyzed isn't the right word, because it's almost the opposite. We're driven to activity, constant activity, because we feel so responsible for everything, right? It's our business, our families, our clients, our teams. I mean, it creates this extraordinary sense of responsibility to the point where we don't step off the treadmill, either because we think something terrible will happen. We think it might be selfish to actually think about ourselves. We, you know, all sorts of things just get in the way. So I talk a lot about, you know, things like understanding if you're feeling overwhelmed, is it a structural issue or is it self-imposed? Like, I mean, do you literally just have too many clients that you cannot physically manage? That could be, you know, that could be something.
Sure.
Or is there something else that is just keeping this frenetic pace where you cannot take a break? Talk about getting intentional, whether that's time off. So the folks who are absolutely engaged, in addition to generating more revenue and reporting better health and better, higher energy and less stress, not surprising, perhaps, they also took more time off.
Mm-hmm.
They took more consecutive weeks off. So not just the number of weeks, but taking them together. So I dug into other research on this. You know, Arianna Huffington's doing a lot around sleep. Jim Lehrer, who's one of my favorite, talks not about finding balance, but about energy management. And he draws on a lot of work with elite athletes. And I think these things are really helpful in getting us to renew. And it's, you know, it's just even as we're talking about it, one of the things that struck me is that of the five steps that we walk through in the book, the first and the last, I think, are the hardest, awareness and renewal, because they are the two that surface all of our internal demons.
Sure.
And we get in our own way. So, you know, yeah, we do need more sleep, but sometimes we need to ask ourselves why we're not getting it in the first place.
Well, and again, like we had said earlier, you know, in the show here, that we don't have an unlimited battery pack, and we have to do things to recharge our batteries. And it's funny, Julie, when I ask advisors that, in fact, it's part of my intake process, and I'll say, you know, how do you recharge your batteries? There's silence on the other end of the phone. Because they don't think about it. It's go, go, go. And, you know, all of a sudden they get to the point of working with somebody like me, and it's just not, you know, they're exhausted. And I hear that often. And when they do take consecutive time, when they identify the things that recharge their batteries, it changes all of the things that you're talking about with absolute engagement. You know what? They're better with their clients. They're better with their team. They're better with themselves. They're just better advisors overall. Well, I know I asked you a whole bunch of questions today, but is there anything that I missed that you want to highlight to make sure our listeners get a chance to know about?
Now, you know what? I think you hit on all the key points. I think, and what I was really trying to do with this is put some structure and a process around some things that we probably already know at some level and do some research to really demonstrate the impact. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've got the data from advisors, we've got three principles, and then we talk about the five steps. And I feel like most of us would benefit from doing a little of this work, if not all of it. And I really appreciate your questions were great, by the way. So that's why I don't have much to say, because, you know, I think you really dug in on some of the important concepts.
Well, thank you. And again, I really do thank you for the advanced copy of the book. I started reading the kind of the testimonials at the beginning, and I was like, wow, this is what Julie wrote. I thought this was going to, you know, because I had absolutely no idea. And then I got to self-care, and I had this huge smile on my face. And I looked at myself in the computer screen because it reflects me back and mirrors are always important. And I was like, okay, so you really, and I believe you really nailed, I think you nailed it right on the head here. This is fantastic. And I can't wait. So the book is launched already as of this podcast?
Yes.
Okay, fantastic.
It is.
Can you tell everybody where they can get it?
Absolutely. So you can go to our site and it's absoluteengagement.com/book.
Okay.
And you'll
fantastic.
Find all the information there.
And we will have links in the show notes to go ahead and purchase the book. So thank you, Julie, for being on the show today.
Thank you so much.
Well, this was Julie Littlechild, founder of Absolute Engagement and author of the new book, The Pursuit of Absolute Engagement, Intentionally Design a Business That Supports the Life You Really Want. Thank you so much for taking time today to learn how to be a top marketer in the world of financial services. Today's podcast was brought to you by AdvisorContentX.com. Find out how 2 hours of your time per month can create up to 40 pieces of unique content that will make you a prolific online influencer. I'm Matt Halloran. See you on the other side of the mic.